We're in Luke chapter 9. Let's begin reading in verse 57. This morning, last week, we talked about a hands-on Christmas. Next week, we're going to talk about a hands-out Christmas. This morning, a hands-off Christmas. Luke chapter 9, beginning in verse 57. Now, it happened as they journeyed on the road that someone said to him, "Lord, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." When I was in preschool, our family lived in a house with a floor furnace. It was a dangerous apparatus. I'm glad they no longer put these floor furnaces in new homes. Hot air would blow up through a vent that was situated in the middle of the hallway. A metal grill covered, and it got very, very hot. In fact, you could burn your feet if you accidentally stepped on the metal grate. My parents were always cautioning us to slow down whenever we walked down the hall. They didn't want us to fall on this furnace. But I was a little boy, and this was Christmas morning. And I was so hyped up. I was fixated on those gifts under that tree, those gifts with my name on them. And so as I ran down the hallway that morning, I got careless and I tripped. And I fell head first over that floor furnace. Thankfully, my hands caught my fall. I saved my face, but my palms were burned. In fact, I still have some of the scars from that morning. Several years later. But if I had slowed down, and if I had thought it through, if I had kept Christmas in perspective, I could have kept my hands off of that red-hot metal grate. You see, a hands-off Christmas that morning would have saved me some pain and some agony. Well, this Christmas, I want to keep you and your family from getting burned. For there is an aspect of Christmas in America, Christmas as it's celebrated in today's culture, that needs to be hands-off to true followers of Jesus. There are some tangibles associated with Christmas. Money and purchases and shopping and socials and eating and whatnot. Things that can rob us of the season's spiritual significance. There are some tangibles that we can grab hold of that will hinder our spiritual celebration. What our hands grab can distract our hearts. Christmas stuff can muffle the Christmas spirit. You know, someone has pointed out that the same letters used to spell Santa also spell Satan. Same letters, just a different arrangement. That's why at Christmas, priorities are everything. Get your priorities out of whack, and Satan will dilute your holiday of much of its meaning. We need to be careful this season to have a hands-off Christmas. In today's text, a would-be disciple approaches and wants to join up with Jesus. He even boasts, "Lord, I will follow you wherever you go." And yet you get the impression that Jesus discerns that there's something disingenuous man's motive. Perhaps the fellow saw Jesus' popularity among the people, and he extrapolated where it might lead. You know, if he stuck with Jesus, man, he could share in his fame and in his fortune. Maybe this man assumed that anybody with miracle-working power was bound to go places, and he wanted to come along for the ride. The man saw Jesus as sort of a rainbow with a pot of gold at its end. We're not told his motive, but whatever it was, it gets challenged. For Jesus bursts the bubble of this wannabe follower. He says, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man, he has nowhere to lay his head." Apparently, this man saw Jesus as a ticket to the top. But Jesus wasn't headed in that direction. Jesus didn't own a home. His name wasn't even on a lease. If he'd applied for a mortgage, his credit app probably would have got kicked back for lack of activity. Foxes have dens. Birds have nests. Partridges live in pear trees. Reindeer live at the North Pole. But Jesus had nowhere on earth that he called home. In essence, Jesus was challenging this man. If your priority is to be somebody and go places in this world, you don't really want to follow me. Remember, when Jesus was born, his family couldn't even get a room at the Econo Lodge. Joseph and Mary ended up bedding down for the night in a cold, damp cave that belonged to cows and goats and chickens. Even later, when this would-be disciple comes to Jesus, though Jesus' ministry is picking up steam, his preferred housing still hasn't changed. Rather than condos, Jesus still prefers roadsides and campfires. Hey, when Jesus goes to sleep at night, rather than a pillow, he likes to rest his head on a rock where he can gaze up into heaven and think about home. If you had followed Jesus from his birth through that first Easter, from the first Christmas to the first Easter, you would have gotten the impression that this man was just passing through. You would know that this world was not his home. I mean, he was even buried in a borrowed tomb. It was a weekend rental. In a sense, Jesus was very attached to planet Earth. No one can question that. There was nothing aloof or distant or unattached about Jesus. He was not some disengaged individual. He was very attached. In fact, he was so attached, he allowed Roman soldiers to nail his hands and feet to a wooden cross. Now, that's attached. Yet, in another sense, Jesus lived a very hands-off life. He lived in a hands-off posture. He was unattached in many ways. Even though it was there for the taking, Jesus never grabbed hold of the world's prosperity or popularity. Material success was never his goal. And the first Christmas was evidence. I mean, the eternal Jesus was the one person in human history that really could have picked his parents. I mean, he could have been born with the proverbial silver spoon in his mouth, born to a family of privilege. Instead, he chose working class kin from the rural region of Galilee, a family with no health care coverage. Certainly no maternity benefits. Jesus was born by choice in the squalor of poverty. And yet you say, yeah, but what about those gifts he got from the wise men? You know, gold, frankincense, myrrh. Man, that's a pretty good start. You fail to recall that those were the gifts that Joseph used as currency to finance their flight to Egypt. After the visit of the Magi, Herod ordered the killing of the babies in Bethlehem, and the Holy Family became refugees on the run. That little bit of gold they received paid for the cost of their exodus. You could always say of Jesus, he was never in it for the money. Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Understand this. The attraction of following Jesus was that he was in touch with heaven, not attached to this earth. That God worked his touch through Jesus. That's what drew us to him. As we talked last week, God was hands-on in the person of Jesus Christ. But following Jesus meant a hands-off approach to material treasures and worldly measures and certainly sinful pleasures. Jesus challenged this wannabe disciple. Was he willing to live without the security of material things? Was fellowship with the Savior and a heavenly inheritance enough to satisfy this man's heart? Is it enough to satisfy your heart? Could he live hands off to the world and hands open to God? Can you? Can I? After she turned 90, Grandma, she found it too difficult to go Christmas shopping. I mean, she was no longer up for the drive to the mall, and she certainly lacked the energy to battle those crowds. And on top of all that, she felt out of touch with the items and the brands that her kids and her grandkids considered cool. I mean, she was no longer buying them the right stuff. So one Christmas, Grandma approached her gift-giving differently. She decided to send out Christmas cards to everyone on her shopping list. And she wanted to insert a gift check into each of the cards. Her kids and her grandkids, her nephews and her nieces could shop for themselves, and they could purchase what they would really enjoy. Inside each of the cards, she wrote, "Buy your own present. Love, Grandma." Grandma even mailed the Christmas cards that year out early. She thoroughly enjoyed her Christmas celebration. I mean, without the typical shopping hassles, her celebration was uncluttered and it was relaxed. She really enjoyed herself. She was able to spend more time with her family. But when Christmas was over, she was struck with horror when she was working through her desk, and there under a stack of papers, she found the gift checks that she had forgot to place in each of the Christmas cards that she had sent to her family members. Grandma had sent the message, "Buy your own present," without including any money in the card. You know, her family thought that they had a grandma with an attitude. Hey, I want to say to you up front that I'm not against exchanging Christmas gifts. Not hardly. A hands-off Christmas isn't a campaign against Christmas shopping or an assault on poor Santa Claus. My name isn't Pastor Scrooge. I like to unwrap Christmas gifts. I haven't copped a grandma-like attitude. But here's my assertion. Christmas should be more than just giving gifts. And here's my question. What would your celebration look like if the custom of exchanging gifts didn't exist? What would be left of your Christmas? Now let's just pretend for a moment. Let's play the what if game. What if this Christmas there were no gift lists, no bargain hunting, no midnight shopping at Walmart, no late night gift wrapping marathons, no kids' letters to Santa, no Christmas mornings around the tree reading names off labels and passing out presents. We all enjoy giving gifts to folks we love. But what if this year that custom and all that goes with it simply disappeared? If presents were no longer present, how much of your Christmas celebration would remain? Think about it. Would your Christmas be gutted, or would it barely be affected? I mean, if gutted were a 10 on the scale and barely affected was a 1 on the scale, where would your Christmas celebration be on that scale? Again, let me reiterate, this sermon is not a tirade against gift giving. In fact, if you have bought a gift for your pastor, please don't take it back. Go ahead and give it to him. He'll enjoy it. He will appreciate it. I believe that gift giving is a legitimate part of a Merry Christmas. In fact, how can we celebrate God's greatest gift to mankind, the gift of His only Son, Jesus, without wanting to give gifts to the people we love? That's just natural. Even the wise men responded to God's gift by giving gifts themselves. Gift giving is a wonderful practice, but gift giving is like kudzu. It can be like kudzu. If you're from the South, you're familiar with kudzu. It's that leafy vine that's taken over thousands of acres. Did you know kudzu covers 7 million southern acres? Kudzu is a vine that's native to Japan and China. But southern climate is perfect for its growth. In the summer, kudzu grows 1 foot a day. It can grow 60 feet in a year. It covers trees and power poles and cars and sheds and even houses. This is why southerners close their windows at night to keep out the kudzu. I mean, the spread of kudzu is almost impossible to contain. You know, scientists have actually found one weed killer that accentuates the growth of kudzu, causes it to grow faster. To kill the weed, the Alabama branch of the U.S. Forest Service recommends repeated herbicide treatments for up to 10 years. My point is, kudzu tends to overwhelm everything else, as does gift-giving at Christmas time. The practice can be all-consuming for the child who looks forward to the gifts and asks for the gifts and makes out the list and then opens the gifts. For the parent who buys the gifts and wraps the gifts and charges the gifts and eventually has to pay for the gifts. I mean, most Americans spend at Christmas the way George Steinbrenner sets his roster for the next baseball season. They spend with no restraint. Did you know that according to the American Consumer Credit Council, the average U.S. citizen spends $935 each year on Christmas? Now, you multiply that times your spouse and your kids, that's how much your family probably spends. And they carry a credit card debt, the average family, of $8,562. That means that every year we go from jingle bells in December to juggling bills in January. And this is why I encourage young couples to think it through how they want to celebrate Christmas when their kids are young, when they're little, before habits form. I mean, once your kids get into elementary school and middle school, man, you're done. I mean, You've already created certain expectations in their minds. A couple of Christmases ago, I asked a little boy in our church. He's probably your son. I asked him, I said, if he expected anything, he was going to receive anything for Christmas. Little guy said, yes, I think so. And I said, well, I said, do you think you'd give your gifts to Pastor Sandy this Christmas? I just wanted to see what he'd say. Well, he mulled it over for a few seconds, and then he replied, only the clothes. Hey, it doesn't take long for a young boy to figure out the most coveted gifts. Expectations form quickly, and changing them is as difficult as killing kudzu. We buy when we could bless. We shop when we could sing. We rap when we could worship. We hurry up when we could really slow it down. We think when we could think. We price when we could pray. We ponder gifts when we could praise God. Hey, we picture what we're getting when we could be praising God for what we've gotten. It's tragic, isn't it? A need for funds can even drown out a love for friends. I'm sure you heard about the employee who was trampled last week at a Long Island Walmart. A mob of frenzied shoppers tore the door off the Valley Stream store, tore it off its hinges, and bum-rushed the employee. In fact, the cops administering CPR were even trampled. On the day after Thanksgiving, if you didn't hear about this, on the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday they call it, around 2,000 shoppers gathered outside the Walmart in the pre-dawn darkness. As the clock ticked down to the 5 a.m. opening, the crowd started to chant, push the doors in, push the doors in. One witness said the shoppers acted like, quote, savages. When shoppers were finally asked to leave the store, that an employee had died, the witness reported they just kept on shopping. Imagine a man was trampled to death so shoppers could save $20 on a big screen TV. But this kind of an